You know, when you picture a high-stakes life-saving surgery, the image that usually comes to mind is just incredibly human.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, we
Yeah.
picture that intense focus, right? The steadiness of human fingers under those incredibly bright operating room lights.
Right, making those split-second decisions while navigating delicate tissue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's a certain comfort in knowing another human being is physically right there, you know, repairing what is broken.
Right, it's a very visceral connection.
But, I mean, if you step into a modern operating theater today, that picture shifts pretty dramatically because those human hands are increasingly stepping back from the operating table.
Yeah, they really are.
They're allowing highly engineered robotic arms to just kind of take the lead.
It is, well, it's a massive paradigm shift. I mean, the entire history of surgery is built around the literal physical touch of the physician.
Which makes sense, yeah.
But removing that direct contact in favor of a console and a screen, it changes the fundamental mechanics of how we heal the human body.
It really does. So, for you listening today, we are looking at the hard data from a major new piece of medical research. We want to see if handing the surgical reins over to a robot actually saves lives and, you know, speeds up recovery for you as the patient.
Or conversely, if it merely inflates the hospital bills.
Right, exactly. And we are grounding this deep dive in something called the PORTAL trial.
Yes, the portal trial.
It is a phase three, multi-center, randomized controlled trial. And it's basically designed to be the ultimate showdown between traditional human hands and robotic assistants in the operating room. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah, to really understand the weight of the portal trial, we have to look at the specific anatomical arena they chose for this showdown.
Because they didn't just pick something easy, did they?
Not at all. The researchers didn't pick an easy or routine procedure to test the robot. They went straight for, honestly, one of the most complex, unforgiving operations in the entire abdominal cavity.
Which is a mouthful to even say.
It is the pancreatoduodenectomy.
Right. And for those following this medical space, you know, this isn't just some simple excision.
No, it's highly invasive.
You are dealing with resectable pancreatic or periampullary disease, which basically means the condition is at a stage where the diseased tissue can physically be removed.
But the physical reality of doing that is wild.
It is. To visualize the mechanics of a pancreatoduodenectomy, I like to tell people to imagine trying to completely remodel the plumbing of a very old, very delicate house.
That is a great way to put it, yeah.
But the catch is, you have to do the remodeling while the water is still actively running through the pipes.
Which sounds like a nightmare.
Because you are dealing with the pancreas, the bile duct, the intestines, the stomach. Everything is just deeply interconnected. It is a highly complex procedure requiring extreme microscopic precision.
Because if you make one wrong move,
Right, one wrong move, one imperfect suture, and that whole biological plumbing system leaks. And that has catastrophic consequences.
the stakes are astronomical, which is precisely why the researchers needed an incredibly robust testing environment. I mean, they ran this trial across seven different tertiary high-volume pancreatic centers in China.
Wow, seven centers.
Yeah, and we are talking about top-tier institutions that process a massive volume of these specific complex surgeries. They gathered data from June 15th, 2020, all the way to November 28th, 2024.
Wait, so they were collecting data right through the absolute height of the pandemic.
Exactly. They were maintaining strict experimental protocols over a 4.5 year window just to ensure a highly reliable sample size.
That's dedication. So, how many people did they actually get into the trial?
They ended up enrolling 268 adult participants, and the demographics were fairly standard for this specific pathology.
Right, mostly older adults, I'm guessing.
Yeah, a mean age of 62, and it leaned heavily male at about 64.2%.
Okay, got it.
And they randomized these patients into two groups. So one, unfortunately, received the standardized robotic pancreatoduodenectomy, which we'll just call RPD.
RPD, right. Makes it easier.
And the remaining 126 received the traditional open pancreatoduodenectomy, the OPD. And crucially, both groups utilized enhanced recovery pathways.
Meaning the post-operative care and the physical therapy protocols, all of that was completely optimized and identical for everyone, regardless of how they were operated on.
Exactly. It levels the playing field. And out of that initial enrollment, 254 patients actually underwent the surgery and completed their follow-ups.
Which forms what researchers call the modified intention to treat population, right?
Spot on. It's a vital statistical boundary. It prevents the final data from being skewed by patients who might drop out or, change pathways mid-trial.
Right.
But what's fascinating here is the specific architecture of the study. This was a single-masked, non-inferiority trial.
Non-inferiority. Let's break that down for a second.
Yeah, that term non-inferiority, it basically dictates the entire burden of proof for the scientists. The researchers didn't actually set out to prove the robotic system was some miraculous leap forward.
Which kind of sounds surprising at first.
It does. But their initial statistical hurdle was simply to prove the robot isn't worse than the traditional open method.
Which, honestly, is the most logical starting point.
Oh, absolutely.
Because when you're introducing a multi-million dollar mechanical system into a space where the human hand has been the absolute gold standard for over a century, your first baseline has to be do no harm.
You have to set a strict floor for success.
Yeah. You establish baseline safety and efficacy. And then once you prove the machine doesn't compromise the patient compared to a human surgeon, then and only then can you begin analyzing the data to see if it's actually superior.
Exactly. It's a very rigorous way to do science.
So if the initial baseline is simply proving the robot isn't doing a worse job than the human, how did the researchers measure the actual advantage? I'm assuming they looked primarily at how fast the patients were able to get back on their feet.
You're right on the money. The clock is arguably the most vital metric for a surgical patient's lived experience.
For sure. Nobody wants to stay in a hospital bed longer than they have to.
Right. So the primary outcome the PORTAL trial measured was the time from the surgery itself to post-operative functional recovery. They summarized this using a metric called RNET, or restricted mean event time, within a 40-day window.
Okay, but we need to define functional recovery carefully here.
Yeah, we do.
Because it is not just a physician walking into the room, glancing at a chart, and signing a discharge paper. Functional recovery in the context of this trial represents a really strict clinical threshold.
It means the patient's autonomic systems are entirely self-sustaining.
Right, so it meant adequate pain control, but specifically without any intravenous pain medications.
Yeah.
It meant the patient was processing 50% or more of a normal diet without any supplemental IV fluids.
They also had to be walking completely independently.
And critically, they had to have zero active intra-abdominal infection.
Yeah.
So you were looking for a complete restoration of biological independence.
It is an incredibly rigorous, very patient-centered definition of healing. And when we look at the results for the traditional open surgery group, you know, the human hands, the operative time spent under the lights was a median of 270 minutes.
Okay, so about 4.5 hours for a human surgeon to remodel that incredibly delicate plumbing system.
Right.
So given the mechanical advantages we always hear about with these robotic machines, I'm assuming the robotic arms shaved a pretty significant chunk of time off that clock.
Well, actually, the operative time for the robotic surgery group was 300 minutes.
I need to push back on this. 300 minutes, that's longer.
It is longer, half an hour longer.
If a patient is under general anesthesia for an extra 30 minutes, doesn't that normally correlate with a much harder, more complex recovery? I mean, the longer your body is splayed open and suppressed by heavy paralytics and anesthetics, the more systemic trauma it sustains.
That is the traditional wisdom, yes.
So how does a longer surgery lead to an advantage? The human surgeon is in and out half an hour faster?
Well, here's where it gets really interesting. Even though the robotic surgery kept the patient under anesthesia for 30 minutes longer, the functional recovery time for the robotic group was 12.1 days.
Okay.
And the recovery time for the open surgery group was 16.7 days.
Wait, really?
Yes. The patients whose surgery took significantly longer actually bounced back and met all those strict functional milestones almost 4 full days faster.
That is wild. You are trading 30 extra minutes of being unconscious for 4 entire days of getting your biological independence back sooner.
It's a phenomenal trade-off.
The numbers definitely tell a compelling story, but I'm struggling with the mechanism here. Why does more time in the operating room equal less time in a hospital bed?
It feels completely counterintuitive until you map out the physical realities of robotic surgery in the room.
Okay, walk me through it.
So that extra 30 minutes isn't necessarily spent cutting tissue or manipulating organs. A massive portion of that time is just the meticulous physical setup of the robotic platform itself.
Oh, like getting the machine ready.
Exactly. You have to precisely dock this massive machine over the patient. You have to calibrate the spatial coordinates of the arms. You have to position the trocars, which are the surgical ports, with literal millimeter accuracy.
So the extra time on the clock is purely an upfront logistical investment.
Yep. The human surgeon is deliberately trading raw speed for microscopic precision in the tissue itself.
I see.
Think back to your plumbing analogy, but add a new layer to it. Imagine you're trying to build a ship in a bottle.
Okay, a very stressful ship in a bottle.
Very stressful. A human surgeon's hands, no matter how highly skilled they are simply too large to fit through tiny incisions without pulling, stretching, and aggressively retracting the surrounding tissue just to get a clear view and angle.
Right, you have to physically pull the body open to see what you're doing.
Exactly. But the robotic arms bypass that entirely. They slip through the narrow neck of the bottle, the small incisions, and then they articulate in ways human wrists biomechanically cannot.
Because they can rotate a full 360 degrees inside the abdominal cavity.
Yes. They can navigate the complex connections of the pancreas, the bile duct, and the intestines with these tiny micro-movements, causing drastically less collateral damage to the surrounding organs.
Wow. Okay. That makes so much sense. So, yes, the patient is under anesthesia slightly longer. But the physical trauma to their body, the cutting, the stretching, the exposure of internal tissues to the open air of the operating room, that is all massively reduced.
Precisely. And less structural trauma inherently means a faster physiological healing phase.
Because the machine's articulation just eliminates the brute force required by human hands to access the operative field.
Right.
And getting a patient out of bed, walking and eating on their own 4 days earlier is a massive victory for their quality of life.
It's huge for the patient.
But, you know, speed and anatomical precision don't really mean anything if the trade-off is an unstable patient. We have to look at the complication rates to see if this faster recovery came with hidden systemic risks.
Oh, safety is the ultimate arbiter, regardless of how fast a patient can walk down the hall. And the PORTAL trial heavily scrutinized secondary outcomes, specifically looking at postoperative morbidity and, of course, mortality.
Right, so let's look at those numbers. The top-level data showed the overall postoperative morbidity for the robotic group was 31.1%, and for the traditional open surgery group, it was 36.1%.
So right off the bat, fewer overall complications with the robot.
Right, but in surgical trials, you don't just lump a mild fever in with, say, a massive internal hemorrhage. The researchers focused heavily on severe complications using the Clavien-Dindo scale.
Yeah, the Clavien-Dindo classification is the absolute gold standard in surgery for grading the severity of a postoperative complication. It just removes all the subjectivity.
I actually tend to think of the Clavien-Dindo scale as the medical equivalent of the check engine light severity rating for your car.
That's a good way to look at it.
Like, grade on is like a loose gas cap. It's technically an issue. The system is flagging it.
Right.
But you can usually fix it easily right at the bedside without altering the fundamental treatment plan.
Right. It's minor.
But this trial focused on complications that were grade 2 or higher. And grade 2 is a violently flashing check engine light. You cannot ignore it. And you cannot fix it with a basic bedside adjustment. You actively have to take the system into the shop.
Right. And in clinical terms, a grade 2 or higher means the patient requires specific pharmacological treatments, like heavy antibiotics for severe infection, or blood transfusions for an internal bleed, or even more intensive surgical and radiological interventions to repair a critical failure.
And the incidence of those flashing check engine light complications was significantly different between the groups. In the traditional open surgery group, 34.4% of patients experienced a Clavien-Dindo grade the second or higher complication.
And in the robotic group?
In the robotic group, that number dropped down to 23.5%.
Wow. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, an 11% absolute drop in severe complications represents a profound reduction in systemic stress. First and foremost, it is a massive relief on the patient's biological reserves. They are utilizing their energy to heal the surgical site itself, rather than fighting off secondary systemic infections or dealing with the physiological crash of an internal leak.
Which is why they heal 4 days faster.
Exactly. But zoom out from the patient for a second and you see the impact on the entire hospital ecosystem.
It dropped from 34% to 23% in severe complications. That fundamentally changes the workload of an entire hospital ward.
It drastically reduces the burden on intensive care units and highly specialized nursing staff.
Because fewer grade 2 complications mean fewer emergency bedside interventions.
Right? Yep. Fewer rapid response calls in the middle of the night, less demand on the hospital's blood bank, and just a much more predictable, stable recovery trajectory for the entire department.
Which is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have to address the hardest, most unyielding metric in any surgical trial, which is 90-day mortality.
Always the toughest metric.
Now, the rates in the PORTAL trial were incredibly low across the board, which really speaks to the elite skill level of the surgeons at these high-volume Chinese centers.
Yeah, these surgeons are world-class.
But even in this highly skilled environment, the robotic system demonstrated an edge. In the robotic group, the 90-day mortality was 0.8%, which equated to a single patient.
Right.
In the open surgery group, it was 2.5%, which was three patients. So small absolute numbers, but a statistically and honestly humanly meaningful difference.
Every single data point in this trial points toward the robotic system providing a safer, more efficient biological recovery.
So if we pause and just look at the scoreboards for a second, the robot requires a bit more time for logistical setup in the operating room, but it heals the patient nearly 4 days faster and demonstrates a statistically significant safety profile when it comes to severe systemic complications.
It does.
Honestly, it sounds like a complete medical utopia.
It does, until the hospital administration receives the bill.
Yes. So what does this all mean? Because this is where the conversation usually hits a brick wall in hospital boardrooms.
The finances always complicate things.
The Portal trial documented that the postoperative length of stay was inherently shorter for the robotic group, 13 days taking up a hospital bed compared to 16 days for the open surgery group.
Right.
In theory, saving three full days of room, board, and highly specialized nursing care per patient should result in massive financial savings for the healthcare system. Yet the total bill is still significantly higher for the robotic surgery.
It is. The median total cost of hospital admission, factoring in any readmissions, was roughly 130,905 Chinese yuan for the robotic group, which translates to about 19,351 U.S. dollars.
Okay.
But for the traditional open surgery group, it was 108,071 yuan. So that is a premium of almost 23,000 yuan just to utilize the robotic platform.
Well, wait, if the patient is leaving 3 days earlier, where is that massive financial premium coming from?
Well, this raises an important question about the hidden structural economics of modern healthcare technology.
It's never simple, is it?
No, never. When you look exclusively at the patient's time in the bed, the hospital is absolutely saving resources. Clearing a surgical ward bed 3 days early increases patient throughput.
Right, you can get the next patient in.
But the staggering capital required to simply turn the robot on currently devours all the savings generated by those shorter hospital stays.
And we aren't just talking about the multi-million dollar upfront purchase price of the machine, are we?
Not at all. The purchase price is just the entry fee.
Oh, wow.
A surgical robot operates on a razor and blades business model.
Oh, like a printer and its ink cartridges.
Exactly like that. You have highly lucrative mandatory maintenance contracts to keep the software and hardware operational. But the true drain comes from the specialized proprietary disposable instruments.
Because the robotic arms don't just hold standard steel scalpels that you can wash and sterilize in an autoclave.
No, they utilize highly engineered articulating attachments. And many of these attachments literally have microchips embedded in them.
Microchips? Why?
The microchip tracks how many times the tool has been used. And it will physically lock the instrument and force the hospital to throw it away after a strictly limited number of uses, sometimes as few as 10 surgeries.
You're kidding. It just breaks itself.
It breaks itself. The manufacturer mandates this to ensure microscopic precision and absolute sterility, which, to be fair, prevents the tiny cables and pulleys inside the instrument from degrading.
Well, that part makes clinical sense.
It does. But it means the hospital is constantly repurchasing these incredibly expensive attachments for every single operation.
And all of those upfront capital costs and recurring proprietary fees are just baked directly into the final hospital bill, which completely wipes out the financial benefit of the patient leaving 3 days early.
Exactly.
Which perfectly frames the trial's final conclusion. The researcher stated that if a healthcare system actually wants to generate wider system-level efficiency gains using this technology, the implementation has to heavily account for procedural volume.
Volume is literally the only way the math works. Remember, the Portal trial was conducted exclusively at high-volume centers.
Right.
If a regional hospital only performs, say, 5 or 10 of these complex pancreatic surgeries a year, they will never recoup the cost of the maintenance contracts and the disposable microchips.
It'd be a massive financial loss.
But if a massive institution is performing hundreds of these procedures annually, consistently clearing ICU beds and getting patients out the door safely 3 or 4 days earlier, well, the economies of scale eventually begin to balance out.
So it is a high-wire balancing act between pushing the absolute boundaries of clinical science for the patient and keeping the financial lights on in the hospital.
That's the reality.
Because the data clearly proves the biological and clinical benefit. But the economic benefit is entirely dependent on massive institutional scale.
It is a brutal trade-off that every major hospital system on the globe is currently trying to navigate. The technology is undeniably superior for the human body, but it is deeply antagonistic to the hospital budget.
So, to distill all of this down for you, the Portal trial gives us a highly rigorous, data-backed look into the mechanics of complex surgery. When you put a highly credentialed expert at the console, utilizing a robot for a procedure as delicate as a pancreatoduodenectomy, it requires an upfront logistical investment of time while you are under anesthesia.
Right.
But that extra 30 minutes buys the surgeon the ability to navigate your anatomy with micro-precision. It reduces tissue trauma so effectively that patients are eating, walking, and recovering their biological independence almost 4 days faster, while suffering significantly fewer severe systemic complications.
Yeah.
But right now, that superior physical healing simply comes at a steep financial premium.
It basically proves that human hands, while historically vital, might not be the safest tool for the job anymore.
And it leaves us with one final, deeply provocative thread to pull on. Because the Portal trial looked exclusively at a dynamic where human surgeons were actively controlling the robotic arms.
Right. The machine was essentially just a highly advanced mechanical extension of the human wrist.
Exactly. But as artificial intelligence continues to advance and integrate into medical hardware, what happens when the robot stops being a passive tool?
That is the million-dollar question.
What happens when it starts using machine learning, analyzing spatial data from thousands of previous pancreatoduodenectomies, to actively guide the human's hands away from a dangerous bile duct? What happens when the AI can automate the suturing process entirely?
Oh, man.
Will that level of machine learning finally bridge the cost gap, driving incredible efficiency and making these surgeries universally accessible? Or, and this is the scary part, will it make the proprietary technology so overwhelmingly expensive that only the wealthiest, most elite hospital conglomerates on Earth can afford to offer this level of care?
The integration of AI into these robotic platforms is the next great frontier in surgical science, and the economic fallout is going to be fascinating to watch.
It fundamentally changes how we view the operating room. When you picture a life-saving surgery a decade from now, the best, steadiest, most experienced hands in the room might not belong to a human at all. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the Portal trial. Keep questioning the data. We'll catch you on the next one.